In 1942, Will Truesdale, an Englishman newly arrived in Hong Kong, falls headlong into a passionate relationship with Trudy Liang, a beautiful Eurasian socialite. But their love affair is soon threatened by the invasion of the Japanese as World War II overwhelms their part of the world, setting off a chain of terrible betrayals. 10 years later, Claire Pendleton comes to Hong Kong and is hired by the wealthy Chen family as their daughter's piano teacher. A provincial English newlywed, Claire is seduced by the heady social life of the expatriate community. At one of its elegant cocktail parties, she meets Will, to whom she is instantly attracted. But as their affair intensifies, Claire discovers that Will's enigmatic persona hides a devastating past. The Piano Teacher by Janice Y.K. Lee, coming from Viking in winter 2009. Hi, Janice. So what inspired you to write The Piano Teacher?
The Piano Teacher started as a short story about a young Chinese girl and a young English newlywed who had just arrived in Hong Kong who took a job as her teacher. And it was a discrete short story that I had worked on for a while. And then I just found that I kept adding on to it and new characters came in and it just became this novel. So Claire and Lockett, Claire is the piano teacher and Lockett is her student. They were the firstborn, and then the plot came much later. Will and Trudy came much later. It took me a long time to write, around 5 years, and I took long breaks from it. But I was always just thinking about the story set in Hong Kong and what these people that I had been writing about were doing. The book came out of those characters, and slowly, very, very slowly, they revealed to me what they would do and what they had done in their past. It's funny when the people tell me that the book is pretty plot-driven because the plot was the last thing on my mind when I started it. I had no plot for a long time, and I think when I was two-thirds of the way through it, that's when I really thought about the nuts and bolts of what had happened to these people and how I was going to get them out of the situations I'd put them in. Also, I grew up in Hong Kong, and I'm Korean, so I was never a local Chinese or an English person, so those are the majorities in Hong Kong. So I viewed these worlds from the outside, as I think many writers do, and that's very helpful. And so I just wanted to write a story of the world that I had seen when I was younger.
The novel really captures the distant world of privilege and glamour that was high society Hong Kong right before World War II. And, remarkably, you've also brought to life the sense of privation and paranoia during the war itself, as well as the prosperous but more sober feel of the years right after the war. How are you able to draw such a convincing portrait of Hong Kong in those three very different times?
Historical fiction is tricky, I think, because you want to do research because of all the wonderful details that really make a novel come alive, like, you know, what people were wearing or what they were drinking or little details like what movies were playing at the time. But you really want to keep the history from encroaching on the fiction because it can really kill a story. I read a lot of books set in that time. I read a lot of newspapers. I particularly loved the ads in the newspapers because they showed life in a way that's very helpful to fiction writers. I learned that people were buying Crosley refrigerators and that they didn't need to defrost them, or that Queen Elizabeth's coronation was a time where a lot of people were having sales to celebrate it, or that you could buy a car in England and have it shipped over to save the tax. Just little things about daily life that you don't get from history books. Also, even the classifieds, like who is offering their services as a tutor, or all those little things that make a story real. And I'm always struck about how people in life aren't that different in the past than they are in the present. People were still doing the same things. They still had love affairs. They were still betrayed. People had to go to the store and buy food. I also read a lot of books about people who had been interned during the war, and I watched movies like Love is a Many Splendored Thing or even The World of Susie Wong. Any novel or book that was set in the 40s and 50s, I read or I watched movies. So basically, I read a lot of books. I watched a lot of movies and tried to keep the story intact while putting all those details in.
Claire, Will, and Trudy are all three such unique and arresting characters, each from such a different background, and each flawed in such an individual way. How did these three characters come to you?
Well, Claire was the firstborn. She was the piano teacher in the short story that I wrote, and I always have been intrigued by stories of people who are thrust into unfamiliar situations and who are out of their element and how they adjust to that. In the beginning, Claire was not very likable, and as I got to the end of the book, I realized that the book was really the story of her evolution, and I became much more sympathetic to her, and she became much more sympathetic as a character. She was a woman who hadn't known much and struggled to make sense of everything that was laid before her, so in the end, she was a better person for her journey, so she was saved. I also struggled with Will for a while. At first, he was just Claire's love interest, and I didn't have a great sense of who he was. And then when I realized he was also involved with Trudy, he became much more clear. I always had a sense that he was a good man, that was clear from the beginning, and that he was struggling with something. But I didn't know myself what it was until I was quite far into the book. So Claire and Will definitely evolved in my head as I wrote the book. But Trudy was the only one that was immediately clear to me from the beginning. I knew exactly what she looked like, who she was, what she would say, how she would say it, even, you know, what she was wearing at any scene. She was so vivid and clear to me. I didn't know what she'd do in the book or what would happen to her, but I knew how she would act. So I love her the most because she was the easiest and most apparent to me immediately, and I never had to struggle with her. All of them, I think, were kind of like children. They're born, and then they grow as you write the book, and they evolve. And by the end of the book, obviously, I had a very good sense of who they were, but it was a real journey for me as well.
Though two very different love affairs form the main strands of the novel, they defy the usual romantic conventions. Why in particular did you choose the vagaries of love and romance to explore the ways that turbulent times can change us?
I don't know what the usual romantic conventions are. Love takes so many permutations and variations. And I think that we know our own stories most intimately, and it's always fascinating to see how other people love. I think that love makes us want to be noble, and I think that war makes us want to survive. And when the two meet, I think only one can prevail. The conflation of the two is always interesting, what the stress of war can do to a relationship. And it's like a trial by fire, I guess. So I was just fascinated by how people are changed when their circumstances change so much.
Thank you, Janice.
June 1941. It begins like that. Her lilting laugh at a consular party, a spilled drink, a wet dress, and a handkerchief hastily proffered. She is a sleek greyhound among the others, plump, braying women of a certain class. He doesn't want to meet her. He's suspicious of her kind, all chiffon and champagne, nothing underneath. But she has knocked his glass down her silk shift. "There I go again," she says. "I'm the clumsiest person in all Hong Kong." And then commandeers him to escort her to the bathroom, where she daubs at herself while peppering him with questions. She is famous, born of a well-known couple, the mother a Portuguese beauty, the father a Shanghai millionaire, with fortunes in trading and moneylending. "Finally, someone new. We can tell right away, you know. I've been stuck with these old bags for ages. We're very good at sniffing out new blood since the community is so wretchedly small and we're also dreadfully sick of each other. We practically wait at the docks to drag the new people off the ships." "Just arrived, yes? Have a job yet?" she asks, having sat him on the tub while she reapplies her lipstick. "Is it for fun or funds?" "I'm at Asiatic Petrol," he says, wary of being cast as the amusing newcomer. "And it's most certainly for funds. Although that's not the truth. A mother with money." "How delightful," she says. "I'm so sick of meeting all these stuffy people. They don't have the slightest knowledge or ambition." "Your name? And how do you know the Trotters?" "I'm Will Truesdale, and I play cricket with Hugh. He knows some of my family, through my mother's side," he says. "I'm new to Hong Kong, and he's been very decent to me." "Hmm," she says. "I've known Hugh for a decade, and I've never, ever thought of him as decent. And do you like Hong Kong?" "It'll do for now," he says. "I came off the ship, decided to stay, rustled up something to do in the meantime. Seems pleasant enough here." "An adventurer, how fascinating," she says, without the slightest bit of interest. Then she finishes up her ablutions, snaps her evening bag shut, and firmly taking him by the wrist, waltzes, there's no other verb. Music seems to accompany her, out of the powder room. Conscious of being steered around the room like a pet poodle, her momentary diversion, he excuses himself to go smoke in the garden, but peace is not to be his. She finds him out there, has him light her cigarette, and leans confidentially towards him. "Listen, I'll be at the races at the Wong's box tomorrow. Do you care to join us?" "The Wong's?" he asks. "Yes, they're my godparents," she says impatiently. "Are you coming or not?" "All right," he says. This is the first in a long line of acquiescences. Will muddles his way through the club and into the upper tier, where the boxes are filled with chattering people in jackets and silky dresses. He comes through the door of number 28, and Trudy spies him right away, pounces on him, and introduces him to everybody. There are Chinese from Peru, Polish by way of Tokyo, a Frenchman married to Russian royalty. English is spoken. They watch the races. She wins $1,000 and shrieks with pleasure. She insists on giving it all away to the waiters, to the bathroom attendants, to a little girl they pass on the way out. Really, she says disapprovingly, this is no place for children, don't you think? Later, she tells him she practically grew up at the track. Her real name is Prudence. Trudy came later when it became apparent that her given name was wholly unsuitable for the little sprite who terrorized her amas and charmed all the waiters into bringing her forbidden frizzy drinks and sugar cubes. You can call me Prudence, though, she says. Her long arms are draped around his shoulders, and her jasmine scent is overwhelming him. I think I won't, he says. I'm terribly strong, she whispers. I hope I don't destroy you. He laughs. Don't worry about that, he says. But later, he wonders.